morning, I'm Anna Palmer, and welcome to the Daily Punch, brought to you by Punchbowl News. It's Wednesday, April 3rd. We wanted to lead this morning's episode with a huge announcement. The Daily Punch is now a Webby Awards nominee. Thank you so much for being loyal listeners and readers. We have a small favor to ask you. Please cast your votes online now to help us bring this award home. You can find the link to cast your vote in the show notes. We are under the podcast shows, news, and politics category. Please make sure to verify your votes to make them count. All right, let's get into the mix. Here are your Washington headlines of the day. Number one, why Speaker Mike Johnson's play to get Ukraine money is iffy at best. Number two, Republicans aren't rushing to back Trump on his immunity legal argument. And number three, K Street Republicans are concerned about Trump's mental acuity. Let's get into it. We are leading Punchbowl News AM this morning with a look at Johnson and his path to on Ukraine funding and whether or not it will work. Speaker Mike Johnson has been giving clues recently about how he plans to push a Ukraine aid bill through the House. It's definitely an open question about whether it could work. In a series of public statements and interviews, Johnson, a longtime Ukraine skeptic, has laid out a possible path for new Ukraine aid. Congress, if you'll remember, hasn't approved any real funding for the embattled U.S. ally since December 2022. U.S. and Ukrainian officials say the battlefield outlook is growing bleak as Russia steps up its attacks. So, for starters, Johnson wants to convert the tens of billions of dollars the United States may send to Ukraine into a loan. This is an approach that former President Donald Trump, another Ukraine skeptic, has suggested. Johnson will also seek to attach the Repo Act to any Ukraine funding legislation. Under this proposal, President Joe Biden would be authorized to confiscate and sell off Russian assets, with those proceeds going to help rebuild Ukraine. The total amounts to roughly $6 billion to $7 billion here in the United States. But the really big Russian asset play is in Belgium, where more than $225 billion have been frozen since the start of the war. Additionally, Johnson is pressing the Biden administration to relent on its ban on new liquefied natural gas export applications. The White House has denied that it's willing to make this trade-off for Ukraine funding, however. So we understand Johnson's thinking here. The Repo Act has bipartisan support. Trump likes the loan idea and it has gained traction with GOP senators like Senator Lindsey Graham. And the energy play is a typical Republican tactic. Highlight an administration policy that they think is wrong and try to reverse it in a bill the White House desperately wants. So we're going to explain this morning why Johnson's current plan, which isn't finalized, is iffy at best and will almost certainly have to change. Let's go through it here. Number one, the majority of the majority. One dynamic the House Republican leadership is focused on is cobbling together a package that would have the support of the majority of the GOP conference. If you'll remember, Johnson didn't get there with the second government funding bill last month, and it will be far trickier here. Johnson clearly wants to pass something, but he has a major problem with conservative hardliners. They see this effort as a betrayal of Trump's America First approach, and it could lead to an attempt to oust Johnson. Of course, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, the Republican from Georgia, has already filed a motion to vacate the chair against Johnson. Yet it's still uncertain whether she'll go through with it. But even if MTG doesn't, some other conservatives may, and that could tip the House into another crisis. Second thing to think about, and of course this is in the weeds, but he is going to have rules troubles. This is a huge problem for Johnson. If the Speaker intends to pass this proposal with a simple majority, he will need to go through the Rules Committee, which is effectively controlled by a trio of Ukraine skeptics. They include Representatives Ralph Norman, the Republican from South Carolina, Chip Roy, the Republican from Texas, and Thomas Massie, the Republican from Kentucky. To put it lightly, it will be very difficult to get them to do anything in support of this effort if the legislation doesn't include border security provisions. And it's important to remember that on April 9th, the House Republican Steering Committee will convene to elect the next Appropriations Committee chair. Representative Tom Cole, a leadership ally who currently chairs the Rules Committee, is the leading contender to be the next Appropriations chair. The third thing to think about is suspension. So if Johnson puts the Ukraine bill on the floor under suspension of the rules, saying, okay, it's going to be too difficult for me to get this through the Rules Committee, given the current makeup of that panel, he could try to put it under on the floor under suspension. Now, there's a lot of dynamics for him to consider. First of all, is converting the aid to a loan enough to quell dissent inside the House Republican conference? Probably not. Consider that former Speaker Kevin McCarthy only got to 107 Republicans to vote for $300 million in new Ukraine aid back in September. So you'd have to assume that Johnson will attract roughly 100 votes for a foreign aid package, even if it includes the goodies he's floating and aid for Israel. Now, that would mean Johnson is going to need 190 Democrats to vote with him. The Speaker could only afford to lose 23 members of the minority party. With all that's going on, it's not just about Ukraine aid here. It's also what's going on in the House Democratic ranks and with Democrats in general when it comes to how Israel is conducting its war with Hamas. We anticipate the Democrats will lose far more than that on any foreign aid vote. So in sum, it's clear Johnson wants to do something here, but his best option may simply be the Senate's $95 billion foreign aid bill, which passed the chamber with 70 votes. All right, let's move on to the number two story of the morning, the courts. Congressional Republicans, including nearly the entire Senate GOP conference, signed on to a Supreme Court brief in January, backing former President Donald Trump when Colorado state officials tried to prevent him from being on the ballot over his role in the January 6th insurrection. Andrew Desiderio is reporting this morning that that same level of support from Hill Republicans has not materialized for Trump on a separate and equally high-profile argument to the court that Trump has absolute immunity from criminal prosecution related to any official actions as president. In fact, the deadline for submitting a brief in support of Trump's position in the immunity case has already passed, according to the Supreme Court's website. And before that March 19th deadline, just one GOP senator and 26 House Republicans signed on to a brief backing Trump's expansive view of executive authority. And none are in the top leadership of either chamber. That compares to 41 GOP senators and 136 House members who signed the Colorado brief, including the leadership in both chambers. It's a pretty significant shift. The immunity brief is led by Senator Roger Marshall, the Republican from Kansas, and was authored by America First Legal, an organization founded by former Trump advisor Stephen Miller. The NRSC and its chair, Senator Steve Daines, filed a separate brief in support of Trump's position in the immunity case, as he did in the Colorado case. But the disparity between the level of GOP support for Trump in each case serves to highlight the unpopularity of the former president's chief legal defense against criminal charges stemming from his effort to overturn the 2020 election results. And here's something interesting. McConnell's prophetic prediction, as we're calling it in this item, McConnell also suggested following the post-January 6th Senate impeachment trial that he believed Trump could be held accountable for his actions by the courts, saying the former president, quote, didn't get away with anything yet. The immunity case before the Supreme Court, of course, directly challenges the notion that Trump can be criminally prosecuted for actions related to his official duties. It's not clear whether Trump will notice or ultimately care about the difference in support in the two cases that could determine not only his electoral future, but also whether he is potentially convicted. Trump's campaign did not respond to a request for comment. All right, let's move on to the number three story of the morning, the canvas. K Street Republicans are concerned about Trump's mental and physical acuity. Questions certainly have been pervasive around President Joe Biden's mental fitness, have overwhelmed conversations leading into the 2024 elections. But on K Street, the concern is more about Donald Trump. Two-thirds of Republican K Street leaders, at 66%, say they doubt Trump's mental acuity and physical fitness to serve as president, our latest survey of downtowners found. Meanwhile, Democratic K Street leaders seem more confident in Biden's physical and mental capacity to serve. More than half of Democratic respondents, 54%, said that they are unconcerned about Biden's cognitive and overall health. One thing is for sure, Americans will be picking between two seniors in November. Recent polling show the majority of voters believe both Biden, 81, and Trump, 77, are too old to serve an additional term. But the results from our survey of K Street leaders conducted March 4th through the 22nd in partnership with LSG were a bit surprising. Biden has received more public scrutiny than Trump over the issue of age and fitness for office, and Republicans have continued to use the two issues to rally their base. Biden also took a major blow, as everyone will remember, after former special counsel Robert Hur in February described him as a, quote, sympathetic, well-meaning elderly man with a poor memory in the classified documents probe. Biden, of course, was not charged. Although Trump's numerous legal charges have dominated his reelection campaign, the former president has had his gaffes as well. Back in October, during a campaign speech, Trump mistakenly referred to the Hungarian prime minister as the prime minister of Turkey. And earlier this year, Trump confused former South Carolina governor Nikki Haley for former speaker Nancy Pelosi. Both Biden and Trump would be the oldest sitting U.S. president at the end of his second term. With that, thanks so much for listening. We appreciate it. If you like the Daily Punch, please, as I said at the top, vote for us. We are looking to win that Webby Award. You can find that in the show notes. You can also subscribe to our morning newsletter for free. All it takes is an email. Go to punchbowl.news and fill it in, and you'll get that in your inbox before 6 a.m. Monday through Friday. Have a great day and stay safe, everybody.